You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
I'm Mary Walter here with Vince Colonese.
Well, the story was very false. I mean, they wrote a story about staff changes today that was very false. We made a wonderful change. I think Mike Pompeo is going to be an incredible Secretary of State. We have some wonderful ideas. I've gotten to know a lot of people over the last year. You know, I've been in Washington for a little bit more than a year, where some people have been here for 30, 40 years. I've gotten to know great people. So there'll always be change, but very little. It was a very false story. It was very a very exaggerated and false story. But there'll always be change, and I think you want to see change. And I want to also see different ideas.
There'll always be change. Will there be change today? For more on that, let's go to the White House correspondent for the Daily Caller, Sagar and Jetty, joining us now. Sagar, good morning.
Thanks for having me, Vince.
So what's the latest here? What do we make? I know the New York Times and the Washington Post out with a twin pieces last night claiming that a bunch of changes could be happening literally today. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty much looking at exactly the same. I ran into the National Security Advisor in the hallway a couple days ago, and we said, you know, how's it going, sir? Are you leaving anytime soon? And he said, well, I'm still here. And so it's a little ominous over there.
What?
But
so that
what we've seen from those short, pardon?
That part of it, H.R. McMaster, I know the press secretary last night, Sarah Sanders, tweeted the following. She said, just spoke to POTUS and General H.R. McMaster. Contrary to reports, they have a good working relationship, and there are no changes at the NSC, which is – is that one of those like present tense kind of excuses where things may actually still change in the next 24 hours?
That's what I was thinking. I noticed that there was no at this time or in the future or any of those other additions that they usually use. And they also didn't add, you know, the standard, there is no personnel announcements forthcoming. So, you know, the usual caveats are missing. But at the same time, you know, a lot of us here, a lot of this is like trying to read tea leaves. What I would expect is it seems that the National Security Advisor, you know, he never particularly gelled with the president. The president's been kind of annoyed at his briefing style. You know, they've been working together for, you know, a little bit over a year now. And the plan, as I understand it, you know, from those stories, is that to try and get the general a fourth star. So this is not something that would be immediately announced. It would be, you know, they would have to line up a post for him. They need to line up a successor for him. And so it's not something that could happen immediately, although the announcement could happen immediately, not the transition.
Oh, want to change topics here, too, because this is something that's not getting a lot of press coverage, obviously, from the mainstream media. And it's about Richard Grenell, longest-serving U.S. spokesman at the United Nations. He has been nominated as U.S. ambassador to Germany. He is openly gay. And the reason I even bring that up is because he's being blocked by the Democrats. They are slow rolling this. And so there is some criticism of them for slow rolling an openly gay candidate as if that's some magical qualification. What's going on? Why are they slow rolling this guy?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's something that actually nobody really knew the answer to until yesterday, until Jake Tapper actually came out with some anonymous reporting based on Democratic lawmakers who said that they were concerned about Grenell's tweets about WikiLeaks, as in, you know, they were concerned that he was championing the leaking of classified information. I actually spoke with a source who was close to Richard Grenell yesterday, and they pointed out that the only thing that Grenell tweeted about WikiLeaks was he was criticizing the mainstream media for not reporting the content. And he actually said repeatedly that the people who leaked such classified information, or that the Russian hacking was abhorrent and that the leakers needed to be prosecuted. So, you know, this and he actually publicly tweeted after the things that Tapper came out with that it was the first that he had ever heard of this. And so, you know, his nomination has been slow rolled by the Democrats for now over a year. And the administration is saying that, you know, it's very dangerous not to have a U.S. ambassador to Germany, to a NATO country, at such a critical time. I mean, just yesterday, we put out a joint statement with the German government about the Russian attack in the United Kingdom, and that's something in which you probably want somebody who, you know, who's advancing the president's agenda helping hash that out with the Germans.
Yeah, absolutely. And the irony, not that I need to point this out, but the irony of the Democrats being concerned about someone advocating, what they say, advocating leaking. Seriously? I mean, are they concerned about Adam Schiff? Where are they going to get rid of him? I mean, that to me is just the height of hypocrisy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've heard much of the same. I've actually spoken with, you know, some people over at the Log Cabin Republicans. They're very upset by this because, you know, you have seen no real statements of support from any of the major gay rights organizations, you know, in the U.S., including the Human Rights Campaign. They've taken a totally neutral stance, even though for other LGBT nominees in the Obama administration, they heavily lobbied Democratic lawmakers. You know, same thing out of San Francisco. Some of the major gay rights groups over there are just totally mum, and that's really just because of the fact that, you know, Rick Grenell is a Republican, so I guess he doesn't deserve the same lobbying that his Democratic counterparts do.
Sagar, you mentioned it a second ago. I want to kind of get you on Russian sanctions and the White House's involvement in them yesterday. We finally got a whole bunch of new information both about what Russia's activities have actually been and what the Trump administration's posture is towards them now. What is that?
Yeah, so a couple senior administration officials told us yesterday at the White House that they've detected a couple of things. They said that the Russians are continuing to try and meddle in our election system. But they also said that there have been malicious cyber attacks on the U.S. energy grid. And that is really a major red flag. So what the Russian cyber, you know, attacks have been going after are our water and our power plants. And so, you know, people have really said that one of the major red lines to the cyber attack is if it causes real world damage. Well, you know, taking out critical infrastructure and potentially like critically damaging, you know, a power plant or a water plant is definitely up there in terms of real world impact. So what the administration has done is they've looped in those attacks with the, you know, meddling from the 2016 election, and they have dropped some major sanctions on them, and they've designated them as malicious actors under some new authorities that Congress gave the president last year.
Yeah, in addition to the fact that they now are concurring with the United Kingdom on the fact that a former Russian spy has been poisoned in the U.K.
Right, exactly. So, you know, now the U.S. I think that Sarah Sanders said yesterday that, you know, we share the U.K. assessment. She didn't say that, you know, the U.S. government has its own, but because of the major intelligence relationship between, you know, it's called the Five Eyes Agreement, but, you know, the five close allies, there would be no reason to doubt that the United Kingdom is wrong on this.
All right, Sagar and Jetty, White House correspondent for The Daily Caller. Thanks as always, sir. Good rundown.
Thanks for having me, Vince.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Well, top of the morning to you. That was horrible.
That was really bad. Do that again.
No, I'm not going to try it again.
No,
but St. Patty's Day is tomorrow. As soon as you're a little more intoxicated, my accent will sound more authentic. 8:37 here on WMAL. Pleased to be joined by Brett Baer of the Fox News Channel. Brett, good morning. Top of the morning to you, he says in a sober way. I appreciate that. Let's talk about your exclusive interview yesterday. Special report, good as always. But on it yesterday, you had Senators Chuck Grassley and Lindsey Graham announcing new information that they want to pursue a second special counsel. They'd like one. What's the new information that's leading them to that conclusion, and what's the likeliness that it happens?
Well, they feel like the Inspector General doesn't have the tools that he needs. So Grassley is calling it a kind of a an addition to the Inspector General to call in people who have left government to expand the ability to get answers to questions that they don't have. They have a list of about 30 questions that they sent in these letters to the Attorney General and the Deputy Rod Rosenstein and also the IG. And they include some questions about Andrew McCabe. They include questions about political bias, who knew what when about the dossier. They include a lot of questions about Chris Steele and the interaction the FBI had with him. So it sounds to me like they're really going to push for this, and Grassley says he's going to, you know, do everything he can to get another special counsel. which would be interesting.
Are any of the questions of any of the 30 questions revelatory in terms of giving us new information that we haven't seen yet?
It's clear that they have seen information, perhaps in a classified state, that raises red flags to them. I mean, just by the list of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there was a court case in Great Britain involving Christopher Steele, in which he testified that he had talked to the members of the media in September of 2016 about the dossier, and the FBI said that he had not, and he was being used as a classified confidential informant during a time when he was talking to the media. So there's all kinds of questions about the FBI's dealings with Chris Steele and about some of the actions of the FBI leadership authorizing some agents and officers to talk to the press.
Yesterday, it was Lindsey Graham, I believe, on your show, who used the term possible criminal activity, that there was that they had seen maybe possible criminal activity, and that's why they want this special counsel. When you have senators telling you, look, we think there's possible criminal activity there, how do you not appoint that? How do you not have that special investigator? Excuse me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a better chance today that there would be one than there was, you know, a couple weeks ago. I also think that that in an effort to really clear the name of the FBI in the minds of the public, that there might be a want to do that and to kind of set the record straight. In the meantime, you know, the Mueller investigation and probe is continuing, and so you have a lot of moving parts here.
You know, regarding the Mueller investigation, it's come out that he has apparently sent a subpoena to the Trump Organization to turn over documents, including some related to Russia. Why a subpoena instead of just asking for the documents? Because as far as we know, the Trump Organization and the administration have been cooperating.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mystery, actually. We don't know the answer to that question as of yet. I know there's a lot of breathless speculation out there on various cable channels, but you're right in that the administration and the Trump Organization has said that they've been cooperative. So whether there is something that the Mueller probe investigators think has been held back, or this is simply a logistical, you know, straight in the corners, get from point A to point B what they want specifically, that's another possibility. But we don't know the answer to that yet.
Yeah, on the media Richter scale, the needle's been bouncing like crazy on this notion that there may be something coming in the White House regarding staff shakeups, because I see the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Associated Press, everybody seems to be in unison. Even Fox News, I saw 2 days ago, reporting that a shakeup is imminent. What is the truth on this? Because I know the president's kind of cashed it out as like just fake news, but he also suggested that there may be some changes still coming.
Yeah, I mean, the truth on it is that it's the president's decision. So, I mean, he could wake up on a Wednesday and say, I'm not going to do it.
Yep.
And he could see a story and say, I'm definitely not doing it. Or he could say, yeah, it's time. So these senior aides who think they know exactly where the president's mindset is with this president often don't. But it seems extremely likely that there are more changes to come, almost certainly. And H.R. McMaster is one that people say that he has looked for a replacement. When that's happening and someone's in the current job, usually that means days are numbered. How many days, we don't know.
Yeah, wanted to also talk to you about, you had mentioned, going back to something that you talked about, mentioning that Andrew McCabe's name came up. We know that he is on borrowed time as far as maybe being fired. Right now he's on, what was it, terminal leave, I think is what they called. He's burning through his vacation days. His last day is Sunday. So Jeff Sessions has until Sunday to decide to fire him if that is what he chooses to do. That was the recommendation that was made by this investigation into Andrew McCabe. So do you think we're going to see Jeff Sessions actually step up to the plate and fire him?
I mean, I think it's possible. Listening to these senators last night, they don't have any love lost for Andrew McCabe. So, I mean, I think there's cover within the party on this move. But there'll be a lot of pushback from career folks, and, you know, it would prevent him from getting his pension. We have yet to see the specifics about what Andrew McCabe is alleged to have done or not done. And I wouldn't be surprised, let's just say that.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of mystery surrounding Jeff Sessions' behavior for the whole Trump administration, mm-hmm. because it's not clear what his recusal actually covers. You just say the 2016 election. That can be so many things, up to and including the behaviors alleged here surrounding Andrew McCabe and the actual appointment of a second special counsel. He's kind of indicated that he'd be open to it, but are you of the opinion that he would himself, or would he turn that job over to somebody else, appoint a second special counsel?
Yeah, I think that it could fall within his purview. I mean, you're talking about things, the investigation in the early stages, and also how the Clinton situation was handled. So I think it would be outside of his recusal, but that's a good question. If it wasn't him, it would be Rod Rosenstein. And I think that there's a question there about
yes.
whether he would go forward.
Yeah, and that might be a little bit messy, too, considering there have been so many conservatives who've alleged that Rod Rosenstein is a bad actor here, and that could pose itself a conflict of interest, the idea that he would appoint a second special counsel that could draw his name into it. Brett Baer, really appreciate all your insight this morning. We'll be watching you on Special Report, 6 o'clock on the Fox News Channel.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Joining us right now on WMAL is Tom Fitton, the president of Judicial Watch. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Mary. Hey, guys.
Good morning.
All right. So I want to know what you're up to, because apparently you are key in getting Andrew McCabe fired, if that's what Jeff Sessions decides to do here. I'd like to know what you have against Andrew McCabe, and remind me never to cross you. So,
well, there are two issues. Andrew McCabe was number two at the FBI, obviously an important position, and the problem was his wife had taken about $700,000 from Clinton crony Terry McAuliffe, the former governor of Virginia, to help with her campaign. And he didn't think it was an issue to participate in the Clinton email investigation until, wait, just a week before the election in 2016. Then he decided he needed to recuse himself, and we uncovered that all. In the meantime, you have these IG investigating, Inspector General investigating the handling of Clinton email investigation, bias at the FBI and DOJ, et cetera. And evidently, the IG just concluded and sent on to both the Attorney General and FBI Director Wray that Mr. McCabe may have misled investigators, or likely misled investigators, about his direction to other FBI employees in terms of leaks about the Clinton email investigation. So, you know, you don't tell the truth. You usually get fired from the FBI. So the word was a month or so ago that he was being pushed out and he was retiring, but it turns out he just went on a leave of absence. And the news reports are this week is that it's now on Sessions' lap as to whether to fire him and perhaps prevent him from getting a pension. Of course, Director Wray hasn't done anything. He could fire him as well.
Yeah, why is it – sorry, that's my question. Why is it falling in Sessions' hands rather than Wray's?
Well, that's a good question. And why are they waiting for the last minute? Because I think his retirement comes into effect at the end of the week. So the fact nothing's happened till now, you know, my guess is the leaks were designed to expose that nothing's been happened by now by people who want something to happen other than just letting him go gently into the dark night. But, you know, this is a major corruption issue at the FBI. McCabe's got a lot of issues, and, you know, if he's pro-Clinton, it's fair to assume maybe he didn't like President Trump either, and his number two and acting FBI director would have been overseeing Russia collusion investigation.
You know, which brings to mind when we talk about Sessions doing this and this deadline looming down, Jeff Sessions allowed the statute of limitations expire on Clapper. And he could have brought, you know, there could have been charges filed about lying to Congress, because that was pretty, from what I understand, cut and dry that had happened. Yet he didn't do that. So I don't have high hopes for Jeff Sessions actually punishing or going after Andrew McCabe in any way, shape or form here.
Well, the deadline presumably is tomorrow, and the notice to Sessions and to the FBI director was over well over a month ago, so it's really inexcusable that they're waiting till now. As I pointed out, there's more than enough reason between the conflicts of interest he had with Hillary Clinton and then presumably lying about communications with the media about Hillary Clinton's email investigation. Boy, oh boy, the FBI is a mess at the leadership level. And my concern is Director Wray is more often concerned about protecting the institution of the FBI than cleaning it up and just, you know, pretending, well, it's the FBI, you can't say anything bad about it, and while ignoring these corruption scandals.
I want to ask you sort of about McCabe in detail here, because McCabe defenders point out he recused himself from Hillary investigations during his wife's campaign, and it wasn't until after the campaign that he allowed himself to be a part of investigations and then subsequently recused himself when public scrutiny was drawn to it. The other side of this, and I'll let you answer both, is that the article to which he supposedly leaked, a Wall Street Journal article, was reflected negatively on Hillary Clinton rather than positively. So they're sort of making the case here that McCabe is blameless in this.
Well, 2 points. He was compromised. He shouldn't have been involved in the Clinton email investigation. You know, 3 months previously, his wife had received $700,000. He's number two or one of the top officials in the FBI. And even while he was getting the money, it's not clear he recused himself directly from the Clinton email investigation. Secondly, the fact the leaks were, quote, anti-Hillary doesn't justify them. And I've long highlighted that the FBI and the FBI leadership has long wanted to have their cake and eat it too, which is to pretend to be investigating Hillary Clinton and defending the reputation of the FBI while leaking improperly against Hillary Clinton. And I don't see any reason to suggest that the FBI ultimately protected Hillary Clinton didn't necessarily, you can't be convinced that they didn't do anything improper in terms of leaking information about her to make themselves look good.
This habit...
It was quite a nasty, corrupt dance that was going on in 2016.
This habit of leaking information rather than just saying it in public statements on the record by law enforcement, this is what, when people talk about the deep state, this is what they mean, no? When you actually use the resources of the government to share information in a way that sort of tilts the conversation.
Well, and, you know, leaks aren't always illegal, but if you lie about them, that's the issue, and evidently that's the issue with Andrew McCabe.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want that in FBI directors or assistant FBI directors, and that's why he's on a leave of absence right now. That's just why the Attorney General and the FBI director have this issue to deal with.
Quick question in the 15 seconds we have left. Am I confusing Andrew McCabe with someone else? Was ordered by a judge to turn over communication records to Judicial Watch?
Oh, well, we've asked the FBI for his text messages.
Okay.
Because we understand there probably are very interesting text messages about that Clinton email investigation.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI has yet to turn over one text message.
Amazing.
Outrageous.
Stuff.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
Tom Fitton, thank you so much for joining us. We do appreciate your time to go walk your dog.
Yes, please do.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
All right, joining us right now here on Mornings on the Mall, Larry Kudlow, the CNBC senior contributor and host of The Larry Kudlow Show right here on WMAL, Saturdays at 7 p.m. He's also the author of JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. Larry, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, sir. So we've had this conversation. Let me get the elephant out of the way first. We've had this conversation with a number of people on this show because it seems like everybody we talk to on this program is considered for a White House job at some point. Larry Kudlow is there's a couple news outlets that are reporting the president is all but ready to offer you the job to replace Gary Cohn. And I know you can't tell us whether or not at this moment that's a done deal. But if the president does offer the job to you, would you accept it?
I just can't comment. I'm very old-fashioned about these things, so I just have to leave it there. We'll see what happens in the next few days. But
Yes,
I don't have any comment one way or the other.
This is what's known as a cliffhanger.
So we just got to wait and see, I guess. And the reason why this is of interest for many regards, obviously, we like you, and it'll be interesting to see if that happens. But the fact is, you've been against tariffs, and you know the president has had a diversity of opinion around him on that subject. I suspect this suggests that he'd be inclined to continue to have that around him.
You know, I just kind of don't want to get into the nuts and bolts of the whole thing. I mean, I've spoken to him, as has been accurately reported.
Yes.
I've spoken to him Sunday and yesterday.
Yes, sir.
But as I always do, I never divulge a private conversation with the president. So I'm just going to have to leave it there. And as I say, we'll see what happens in the next couple of days.
Okay. Our eyes are wide open. We're waiting to see what happens.
Thank you.
Let's talk about...
Don't mean to be disrespectful, by the way. It's just kind of the way it is, has to be right now.
I understand completely. So we figured we'd ask because, you know, when you have like one of the most interesting people in America on, and we have to ask you the question that everybody's interested in. So let's move on to the other subjects involving the President of the United States. You've got immigration, the president going to take care of that border wall today. He wants to look at these prototypes in California. 8 of them are standing on the border, going to a state that has already declared that for whatever reason it's at war with the United States. How important is getting a border wall up to our economy, for instance?
Well, I guess building a wall or a barrier or a fence or whatever we're going to call it is will have some impact here at local construction. But it's, you know, this is done in terms of perhaps economic security, national security. And I support President's immigration policies, you know, and I think it would be really a shame if Congress doesn't get moving on this stuff. So far, they haven't done anything. And look, I think whether it's, that so-called wall, you've already got a huge fence from, you know, down around San Diego through, I think, well into Arizona. It's worked pretty well. I think his whole package, which is anchored by the wall, I suppose, but, you know, let's go to a merit-based system, for example. And I agree with that. Let's get rid of this crazy diversity visa lottery. Mm-hmm. Let's get rid of that. And, of course, the wall is part of that security package. I think he's willing to be pretty lenient regarding the Dreamers. He said that a number of times. I think the last number he said he'd let in was 1.8 million, but it can't be alone. DACA cannot stand alone. It has to be part of a broader immigration package. So I support it. I think it's the right thing. We'll see what happens on it. I'm glad he's drawing attention to it, frankly. And so the trip out there is going to be very valuable.
You know, as he's going out there, a new study has come out from the Center for Immigration Studies that found that the wall will probably pay for itself. There's a very good chance it'll pay for itself because it curbs crime that we don't have to fight, drugs, and illegals who tend to then collect federal benefits. So we won't be paying those things out. Do you agree with that study?
I do, basically. Look, I know the center. They're good people. I haven't seen their, you know, their data points, but they're always pretty good. So, yeah, I think there will be a lot of savings over time. Look, one of the key issues here is just general safety. I mean, you know, you talk about sanctuary cities where you've got, the whole state of California is in revolt?
Right.
I mean, where politicians are openly, you know, elected officials are openly campaigning against law, and they won't work with the federal people on this. I think that's just nuts. The whole thing is nuts. And maybe the Democrats think this is the key to future elections, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of grassroots support for the president's entire package. And I really want to emphasize this. The wall goes along with a lot of other things, you know, including DACA, of course, but the wall goes along with a whole new system, a legal system, you know, of merit-based applicants. And they should be able to enhance America. They should be able to help us work in. They should be prepared to work. They should have some experience. They should have a job coming in. All that, I think, is terrific stuff. So, yeah, he needs to draw attention. Then I'm quite certain you'll see the president really sticking with his guns on these positions. I think he's absolutely right. And the Democrats are dragging their feet. And I guess the Republicans aren't moving near as much as they should be, in at least in the House. Probably the Senate, too. I haven't followed it carefully. I've been a little busy the last few days. But yeah, I think President's exactly right on this.
All right. Well, I don't know why you're busy because you can't tell us, but Larry Kudlow.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Really appreciate you chatting with us and look forward to chatting you possibly next week in the event that something happens that we can't talk about. Larry, nice to chat with you,
so
sir.
Much.
Have a good one.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Yes. Extend that stride. Run in slow motion. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got a victory. Steve Moore, he's an economist at the Heritage Foundation. He served as an economic advisor to the Trump campaign. And he's buddies with our buddy, Larry Kudlow, who just got picked up as the White House National Economic Council Director. Good morning, Steve Moore.
Hi, Vince. Hi, Mary. Boy, it was like Christmas yesterday for me when I got that news that Larry got the job. How long has he been doing your guys' show? I mean, a long time.
For the last 40 years, yes. So. You're right. Yeah,
he's fantastic.
Well, so take us behind the scenes, because you actually are friends with Larry Kudlow, and you've written a lot with him. You've influenced the president's tax plan, the tax plan that so many people are now enjoying in terms of their paychecks. It's owed a credit to you and to Larry, and among others. And so, what was yesterday like? How do you find out? And what if any was your conversation with Larry?
Well, you know, Larry had been kind of speaking with the president for the last several days about the possibility of doing this, and you know, Larry goes back with the president for the last 2 years. He had been working you know, on the campaign, and was one of the first, you know, major conservatives to endorse Trump, which I think had a big impact. I mean, Trump really appreciates the people who were with him from the start. And by the way, both Larry and I have the whiplashes on our back from the some of the fallback we had from that. But, you know, I think, look, Larry is simply a great communicator. I listened to him on your show, on every Tuesday morning or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's just nobody better to communicate the Kudlow creed. You know, free market policies are the greatest path to prosperity. And I think he'll be a great asset to this president. He just will go out there and sell the president's message. I mean, how does a president, I've been thinking about this, how does a president who has a phenomenal economy, I mean, what he's done in the economy has been far even exceeded my expectations. How does one with the best, you know, economy in 25 years only have a 40% approval rating? And I think part of the problem is they haven't communicated that message of how great the economy is to people, and I think Larry will be fantastic about it.
And apparently, or allegedly, the president said to Larry when he called him, he said he was looking at Larry's photo on television and told him, "You're looking handsome, Larry," which I love. We know they don't agree on everything. Is that going to be a hindrance or a help?
Well, that's a great question, Mary, and I wish I had a dime for every time in the last 2 days I've been asked about, you know, Larry's position on trade versus Trump's. And, you know, it's no secret that Larry is much more of a free trader than Donald Trump is, but, you know, nobody agrees with somebody else 100% of the time. And the main point is Larry and Trump probably overlap, you know, 90 to 95% on the tax cuts, on the deregulation, on the pro-American energy policy, on immigration reform, on infrastructure, all that stuff. Larry and Donald Trump are on lockstep. Now, they do not entirely agree on trade. There's no question about it. I've been in the room when the two have argued like brothers, you know, on this. But I actually respect Donald Trump a lot for picking Larry for this reason. You know, remember what he said, Mary, about a week or two ago? He said, "I like different views expressed at the table." Mm-hmm. And, you know, Larry has a view that is much more free trade oriented than, say, a Peter Navarro or some of the others in the White House. But that's a healthy thing for a president to bring, you know, different views to the table. I mean, Barack Obama just surrounded himself with a bunch of yes men,
right,
and that didn't lead to very good policy. So, you know, Larry will duke it out. But one of the things, I mean, I've talked to him about this. Once the president makes his decision, then if you're working for him, you go out and sell that message. You know, that's what you do if you're working for the president.
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen it in some sense. First of all, here's the president just 2 days ago talking about Larry and the fact that he was being considered for this gig before it was officially offered.
We don't agree on everything, but in this case, I think that's good. I want to have a divergent opinion.
He wants a divergent opinion. And then we kind of heard Larry Kudlow over the weekend saying, you know, regarding these tariffs, that it's, quote, a Trumpian way of negotiating. You knock them in the teeth and get their attention, and then you kind of work out a deal. And I think that's what he's done. My hat's off to him. He had me really worried. Now I'm not. So Larry's suggesting, like, look, I see what he's doing here, offering a tough stance on tariffs, and then he's going to bring it to reality in terms of coming up with a deal.
Well, let's hope so. I mean, look, this is still a work in progress. I think Donald Trump himself is still sort of formulating his trade policy. I do think, I'll make this prediction on your show this morning, I think in the next week or two or three, you're going to see a major policy, tariff policy recommended by Trump with respect to China. And that is going to be a big, big announcement. We've got the two, heavyweights in the world economy where Trump we'll talk about a 30 or 35% tariff on China, and it will be related to the fact that China is stealing, according to a new report, $500 billion a year. That's by the way, it's $500 billion, not $500 million, of our technology and our patents and our copyrights and our music and our computer software. All that stuff that we produce is stolen by the Chinese. And I was asked yesterday on CNN, well, doesn't a tariff against China violate free trade? We don't have free trade with China. Look, the best of all worlds would be to have China back down and stop stealing from us.
Yes, it would. Well, unless you're a psychic, that doesn't get invented out of whole cloth. There's something going on behind the scenes. I'm glad you're giving us hints. Steve Moore, thank you. It was nice to talk to you this morning, sir.
Thanks, Steve.
You guys have a great morning.
You've been listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listen Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. to hear the show live on 105.9 FM, WMAL.